Welcome to the Presentation Podcast, Episode 10.
Join us from inside the design studios for conversations about presentation design, strategies, tips and tricks, running a design studio, and more, all for presentation designers, managers, and presenters. Here are your hosts, Troy Collar, Nolan Hames, and Sandra Johnson.
Hi, I'm Troy Collar from TLC Creative Services, based in Southern California in Murrieta.
Welcome to the Presentation Podcast. I'm Sandy Johnson with Presentation Wiz, and I'm in Green Bay, Wisconsin.
And I'm Nolan Hames from Nolan Hames Creative in Montclair, New Jersey.
So for today's topic, it's kind of a conversation about what has happened over the years. When I started transitioning to presentation design, PowerPoint and anything else that was out there as a presentation app like Harvard Graphics, Director, and Flash, to put a timestamp on those, Mac Keynote did not even exist yet. They were all extremely limited in what editing capabilities they offered. A typical presentation for me involved literally hundreds of images created in Photoshop and Illustrator, and then lots of motion graphics from Flash, all imported into PowerPoint. Now, those Photoshop elements could be as simple as a beveled box with a soft shadow, because that's what you need to do if you wanted that visual styling in PowerPoint. PowerPoint was literally just a canvas for imported content. And I know a lot of designers will identify with this. It was kind of a great way to start into presentation design, because I had no opportunity to get stuck in the bullet list mentality, because I never looked at PowerPoint for what it could do, but what I could bring into it and make it do to replicate the other design work I was doing. Today, in those modern times we live in, you can do so much more of this directly in PowerPoint. So our discussion topic today, Adobe techniques, and we're just kind of using a little air quotes around that for anything kind of visual styling, Adobe techniques that can be done directly inside PowerPoint. Let's start with Photoshop, the most widely used Adobe application in the world. What Photoshop, and again, I'm doing the little air quote things, what Photoshop or image techniques can you do directly in PowerPoint that you can also do in Photoshop, but you don't have to do in Photoshop any longer?
Yeah, there are lots. And if you talk to a graphic designer who spends most of their time in Adobe programs, they just don't think PowerPoint can do anything other than import a JPEG. But over the years, Microsoft has really, really brought features, editing features, to the point where even though I have Photoshop up constantly on my computer, I do more and more photo editing in PowerPoint. And we'll talk about some specific ones, but the best reason, or the reason that I use PowerPoint over Photoshop, is because when you make an edit to a photo in PowerPoint, generally it's non-destructive. Not only is it fast, because you're in the program already, but it's non-destructive. So things like cropping, resizing, rotating, brightness and contrast, sharpening, you can even recolor images, put artistic effects on them like blur. You do all that stuff in Photoshop, it's generally destructive, meaning even if you have layers and you haven't destroyed the initial image, you're still, if you want to make a change, you have to go back to Photoshop and then bring it back into PowerPoint. In PowerPoint, you just undo it or reset the image back to its original. So if you crop something in PowerPoint, you still have the whole image. Mm-hmm. You can go back to the original anytime you want.
I think all of those are really great points. And the non-destructive description, I think that I've never heard it put that way. And I think that's a very good way to think about this. Similarly, and although this tool isn't as good as Photoshop, I feel like it's not even as good as it used to be, but removing the backgrounds in PowerPoint, you can do that. And then, of course, masking. I used to go to Photoshop a lot for that. So those are two techniques I would add to Nolan's list.
Yeah, and again, Photoshop will always be able to do things that PowerPoint can't. And if you really need all that hair, finely cut out, you're going to spend your time in Photoshop to do that. But real quick background removals or like cropping, like we've talked about, there's no reason not to do it in PowerPoint.
Or recoloring. I'm using that so much now. That's very trendy in design, the colored photos. Mm-hmm. So that is so easy to do in PowerPoint.
I just did a whole effect for the company I was working with, they have blue as their theme, and they've created for this current iteration of communication, it's a blue duotone effect. So I had received this image and they're like, we need to make this, you know, the blue effect. And they kept calling it the blue effect. And I didn't know what that really meant. So finally I got some other collateral. I'm like, oh, it's a blue duotone. Sure, no problem at all.
Click.
But they wanted to see if we could do it. And I literally was able to do the duotone effect directly in PowerPoint and then use a little brightness and contrast. Perfect. I was like, this was the mock-up stage, but if you're good with it, I'm done. So we're going to talk about shadows and soft shadows later. So I'm just going to cover a whole different Photoshop technique. And that's kind of dealing with logos, because lots of slides need a company logo that is either solid white or solid black as part of the design elements or whatnot. If you're lucky, we get the vector logo and we can ungroup it. And, you know, it comes into PowerPoint as a vector element, EMF, WMF options, and you know, we can ungroup it. We can change the color then using the paint bucket. So those are really cool Illustrator type effects we can do, or techniques we can do inside of PowerPoint. But if the logo is raster, like a JPEG or PNG format, there's still some things you can do directly within PowerPoint. And you've actually always been able to do these. Mm-hmm. And this is very timely because a project we're working on starting earlier this week, they supplied us their logo in two formats. It's like, great. They gave us a JPEG, which is not so great. It's the full color logo. But it's on this like blue gradient background. I'm like, well, that's useless. And they gave us a PNG format. And the PNG was nice. It has all the colors, but the colors are, it's an overall dark color logo. I'll just say that. And it won't work on the template they've selected, which is a graphite gray. No problem at all. We took the PNG into PowerPoint. We just clicked on the logo image, brightness and contrast. Brought the brightness all the way up. Now we have a solid white logo, which is within their style guide, and we're good to go with this presentation because it was quite obvious we weren't getting another version of the logo from anybody there. Mm-hmm. So again, work that normally would have been done external from PowerPoint or any Office product, instantaneous in PowerPoint. It's a really, really cool effect.
One of my favorite techniques that I do all the time in PowerPoint is stretching images without distorting. So very often, you know, we've got an image that might fit a 4:3 slide, but suddenly we're working widescreen and we want that image to span the whole slide. So if we stretch it, it's going to distort. Now, you can stretch an image like 5%, sometimes 10%, you know, depending on the content, without people noticing. But any more than that, it's going to start to look wrong. So what you can do in Photoshop is there are various techniques, including content-aware scale, which is an incredible magical thing that when it works, it will actually, as you stretch an image, parts of it won't stretch and parts of it will. So like if you have a person in the center, only the background will stretch. I don't know how it works, but
it's incredible. Awesome.
You can do something kind of similar in PowerPoint. Let's say you have an image, like a square image, you want to try to fit onto a widescreen slide. And in the center of it, you have a person standing sort of dead center. And behind them is like, you know, they're on a mountaintop, or they're, you know, there's a background behind them. What you want to do is not stretch the person, but stretch the background, which won't be as noticeable at all. So if you left align that image to the page, what you'll be left with on the right side of that image is a part of the sky that you can stretch just that part. And the way you do this is you duplicate that image. So you have two images right on top of each other, and then you crop over up to create a portion of that image that stops right before it gets to the person. Now you basically have a little slice of that background and only that background, and that little slice you can manually stretch all the way to the edge of the slide. And then you can group the two images together, and it creates a seamless blend between that non-stretched image where the person is and the part of the image that's stretched between those two images. So
I love that technique.
Hopefully that was clear.
No, what
I
the
hope
one
it
thing,
makes sense.
Yeah.
I understand it. I can visualize it because I do it a lot. One step that I take, and maybe you just didn't cover this, was before I crop the second image, I use the alignment tools to make sure that they're perfectly aligned.
Yes, yes.
And
you want to make them top and bottom aligned.
Exactly. And also, if there's a lot of space that a stretch becomes a little too obvious, sometimes I will repeat that that new addition that yes. you would be stretching, and I'll rotate it horizontally and repeat that back and forth. Yeah, flip it. Yeah. Thank you.
I was going to say, Nolan, I missed it. Did you say you flip the, when you dupe it, do you flip it so basically the right edge of the original image and the left edge of the newer stretched image, you know, pixel line up?
No,
you can do that to get a little extra space, but generally I don't, since I'm cropping only in, since the images are on top of each other. Uh-huh. I'm only using, let's say, the right third of that image to stretch. So it's part of it still overlaps the original photo. So I don't have to mirror image it, but you can do that as well if you need extra space.
So what did you call it again, the technique?
I just call it stretching, stretching without distorting. I don't have a real name for it.
We call it filling the frame. Take the image and fill the frame. So everybody on the design team knows that they're going to, in PowerPoint, as opposed to pulling it out into Photoshop and doing it that way. But the idea is you can do it in PowerPoint.
Yes, That's a point. Yeah. Speaking of doing it in PowerPoint, let's talk about, air quotes, Adobe Illustrator as the king of vectors in graphics and art, and how powerful PowerPoint has become in the vector world. It's huge opportunities for all of us. Before we go there, though, and I've always been a PowerPoint first designer. I learned the Adobe suite out of necessity after I learned PowerPoint. So the concept of vector versus raster was something I had to teach myself. And I think a lot of people out there don't understand it. So if you bear with me, and please interrupt if I'm not explaining it correctly, but I would love to spend just a sec explaining what a raster is versus a vector graphic.
Please.
Well, I'm going to take it from the perspective of somebody who doesn't design, who is importing images onto their PowerPoint slide. They'll probably go to the web and pick up something and copy and paste it without paying attention to what the size of that piece is. When they try to create that image that they've copied from Google, it'll get all pixelated.
Or their preferred royalty-free service.
Well, I'm saying the typical user who doesn't understand that they should be paying for this in the first place.
That's a whole nother topic.
Yep, exactly. So that for the can be described as a raster image. And what that means is that it's created with dots. Imagine that image is a square inch and it's a 300 DPI. That means that to create that image, there are 300 dots per inch. So when you expand that 300 dots, that 1 inch to 10 inches, all of a sudden, those dots can't fill the space anymore. They enlarge and your image becomes lower quality, a low-res image. Vectors, on the other hand, take that same 1 inch by 1 inch square. There's only 4 dots, the quarters, right?
They're made up of a mathematical equation.
Exactly. So if you resize that vector graphic based on the image, it loses little or no detail. The vector points, those 4 points, spread out, and the computer just redraws that image.
That's a good way to put it. The computer redraws it, the mathematical equation. They're always, and it can be a curve. It could be very complex art elements.
It can, and there's more than 4 dots, but that was just simplifying it, explaining.
I often explain it by telling people to, if you see a billboard up close very often, if there's a photo, like of a person, it'll be very pixelated and you'll see the dots and it'll be very blurry. But any text or a logo that's on that will most often be crystal, crisp. And there you're seeing the text, which is vector, and the image that's raster.
Just to help, so a raster extension is probably your JPEG, your PNG, but a vector extension is EPS, SVG, they're Adobe export options, and then the EMF is a Windows-based vector format.
Yeah, we should probably put that in perspective. So .ai is your Illustrator, which is the native that. EPS is very
SVG
high quality.
Is a newer format.
It's very, very good high quality. And PowerPoint can use EMF and WMF, which are basically the lowest level vector format options, and that's what PowerPoint can use.
Yes. And it can, Nolan and I were just talking about this before we started the session, and I've imported EPS into PowerPoint, but
it does not convert in the way that EMF, so it's probably not a preferred format.
It's not preferred at all. I will only do that when I, quote unquote, break that vector. And the whole purpose there is I break an EMF, EPS, I break it so that I can convert it to PowerPoint.
Break
shape.
Meaning ungroup, correct?
Ungroup.
So
thank
you do the ungroup,
process
ungroup
is
thing?
Yes. You insert the image, you go to format, group, ungroup, you say yes to the question that pops up, and then you might need to ungroup it a second time, more so with the EMF. If you're importing an EPS, you have to do it a gajillion times. And when it's once it's fully ungrouped, you have a lot of shapes that you can that treat as PowerPoint shapes.
So that's the way to get a vector into PowerPoint, a vector such as an EMF. You bring it in and then you ungroup it and then you get all the points.
I mean, you can use it grouped and resize it, but you can't do individual edits. And it's probably really important to point out that PowerPoint shapes, you know, boxes, arrows, circles, those are actually vector graphics. So meaning you can make a small circle or a very large circle out of the same one and you'll have no quality loss. So PowerPoint is a vector based application. All of its native elements, SmartArt, those are all text. They're all based on vector algorithms. So they're vector art, which is really good.
It is. And I know we'll cover this off more, but that's why I love using PowerPoint vectors. I love creating graphics with it.
Yeah, I do it all the time. And so the caveat here is that everything Sandy just explained is on the PC. Now,
yes
you can, on a Mac, you can import an EPS. I believe you can even import, you can import an EMF or WMF, but you will have no ability to break them apart. So they come in and they get automatically rasterized. So you can use them, but you're not getting the... you're not getting the real benefit of bringing in that type of, of format. There is, now I should say, if you bring it in on the PC and then break it apart and then you open that same slide or file on the Mac, they have been converted and they are vectors. So the way to get vector information into the PC is to have a friend that has done it for you on the PC. Or I use a fairly convoluted method that I'm going to tell you about now. But it's what I do day in, day out, because I use iconography and vectors all the time. And I so don't want... Yep.
So you mean working on the Mac? You're doing it on the Mac. Okay,
correct.
Yeah, this will be good.
I spend about 95% on the Mac. I just don't... I'm just lazy. I don't want to go over to my PC and do it and then bring it back into Mac. So my format is I'll do something in Illustrator, you know, make an icon or edit it or download, you know, something like from Shutterstock and a pre-made icon. Then, in order to get into PowerPoint, I export it from Illustrator, not as an EMF, but as a Keynote file, a .key file. And the only way you can do that, that's not native to Illustrator, you need a little third-party extension that you can get. This guy named Christian Holtz created this Illustrator export to Keynote. This little thing, it installs very quickly. And we've got his website up in the show notes. The only challenge here is that it only works in the older version of Keynote. So if you export it and then try to open that file in the latest version of Keynote, I think they call it Keynote 6, it's not going to open, which means you have to hopefully still have an old copy of the old version of Keynote, which I do. So once you open it up in Keynote, it's vector. Now you can see where this is going. You simply export the Keynote to a PowerPoint file and you're done. So it's a couple step process, but honestly, it takes me a few seconds with shortcut keys, and that's the way I get Illustrator content into PowerPoint.
So the fact that PowerPoint is a vector workflow made it an easy transition for me when I was focused on Flash design, a lot of visual stuff along those lines. So the idea that text is scalable without any quality loss, which was a big deal in the early days of Flash, because you'd take the text and it was the first time you'd ever... if you had the big word the, and you would zoom it out so it covers the frame and becomes a transition to the next one, and it was really cool because you had no quality loss. If you did that if you scaled that in video, you'd want to do it really fast because those letters were going to become really pixelated and you didn't want people to see it. So the concept of text is scalable without any quality loss, especially for animation and layout purposes, was an easy transition for me, and it was just fantastic. One of the best newer tools in PowerPoint is the Merge Shapes feature. So again, we're talking all about the vector end of things. And I kind of tend to refer to this tool as Adobe Illustrator 2.0 in PowerPoint. It's a great vector editing option right within PowerPoint, even if it's not as robust as editing in a vector graphics program like Adobe Illustrator. The tool has gotten a lot better too, because I used to call it Illustrator 1.0. So here's an example of using the Merge Shapes tool, and it's right on the format tab. Put any two, you know, put two squares or square and a circle on a slide, select them both, go to the format tab, and then you'll see a Merge Shapes tool option. If you've never played with it, this is pretty much like playing with the basic entry level into Illustrator. So here's my example. Make a square, make it whatever color you want. Add a heart, which is another icon in, you know, another shape you can create in PowerPoint. Just layer them on top of each other. Now, what you ultimately want is you want the heart cut out of the square. And that's not something you could do in PowerPoint before these tools were there. And it's incredibly easy now. So I've got a square. I've got a heart shape on top of the square. I select them both. I go up to the, I'll even make it more complex. I can add a gradient fill to the square and add a drop shadow and some other, you know, PowerPoint effects. It doesn't matter for this because of what Nolan was saying. It's non-destructible. All those effects are put on top of the image, whether it be vector or whether it be raster. So I'm going to grab both of those. I'm just going to go up there and I can use the, there's a couple of them. You could use the, yes, sir, not join. You want to use combine, break apart. I don't have one in front of me to remember which ones to use, but you can, subtract. There's the one I was looking for, mm-hmm. Subtract. So now you've got the two shapes and it's going to merge them together and create a custom new shape, which is going to be completely vector based and easy to work with. And now you've got a square with a heart knocked out of the middle, and you suddenly have the ability to rescale it, resize it, animate it. It's still even a text box. You can put text inside of it, which may or may not work depending on what you're trying to accomplish. Yeah, recolor it. It's just the coolest tool. And these are things you had to go outside of PowerPoint to do until fairly recently. So that is a great tool that is definitely Adobe-like techniques done directly in PowerPoint.
And I don't know if you mentioned it, but the tool is in Illustrator is called Pathfinder.
Yes.
And that's essentially what this tool is. Again, not as robust, you know, as an Illustrator, but getting close.
Will you guys humor me as someone who works mostly in PowerPoint and less in the Adobe products? When you're exporting a vector from Adobe to an EMF, what is the process that you have to take?
It's export. It's not save as.
Yeah, got it. File export.
Okay. Thank you, because I could never figure that one out. It's like I always went to the save as, and I'm going, well, there is no EMF here.
Okay. And for me, it's F5. That's one of my keyboard shortcuts. Export in all programs is F5. So just boom, okay. And it pops right up.
And I think, you know, my questions might sound naive, but I'm totally coming from the perspective of people who aren't using these other tools at all.
Well, that's great, and because I think most people that do work in PowerPoint don't use those other tools, and they can complement each other. I mean, as I say all the time, it's PowerPoint is just a tool. Adobes are just tools, and you can do a lot of the stuff, and you can do the same thing in many, many different tools. Maybe one's better than the other, but maybe one's more convenient than the other.
Yes,
or one's quicker than the other. So it's not, you know, you can do photo editing and probably 100 different programs. Doesn't necessarily mean one is perfect and, exactly. and all the others aren't. So that's sort of Illustrator and Photoshop. We've covered that. One of the other major Adobe programs, even though they have dozens, is InDesign. And that's certainly a program I use all the time. I used to actually teach InDesign years ago. That's Adobe's industry standard layout program. So any magazine, any newspaper, any book, anything you've ever seen sort of professionally laid out, 99% of the time it's been done in InDesign. It's the dominant layout program. Now, in PowerPoint, PowerPoint's very limited when it comes to text layout, as we've discussed and harped about, you know, previously. Mm-hmm. There's no text wrap, like you can't wrap a text around a circular image. You can fake it with manual line breaks, and I think I just did that the other day, but it's not ideal. you can't, there's no text run. So you can't run text from one text box to another text box on the same page or on a subsequent page. Like you can, like you let, when you lay out a whole book in InDesign, you, it's basically a series of boxes with the text running from one to the next to the next. There's limited styling. In Microsoft Word, you can set, I believe, an infinite number of paragraph and character styles, which makes formatting your text very easy. But in PowerPoint, you pretty much are limited to a header and body style. And even that's, you know, not very powerful.
Well, Nolan, talk about header and body font style. Is that what you mean when you?
But up under the font selection tool, when you pull down to select all your different fonts, at the very top, it's going to say, it's going to list two fonts,
right,
and in parentheses it'll say header and body. Now you can, now PowerPoint gives you all these default options when you set your themes. You can set sort of predefined header and body fonts. Mm-hmm. You know, there's like Arial and Arial, or Arial Black and Arial, or, you know, all different, you know, sets. And on the PC side, you can actually customize that. So you can set any font to be the header and any font mm-hmm. to be the body. Now, it's only a font. It doesn't carry along, you know, like bolding or italics.
Or line spacing. Mm-hmm.
Correct. So that's why it's even more limited than what's in Word. But it can at least get you, and the power of this, or the semi-power, is let's say you set all those because you're using two fonts in your, only two fonts in your presentation. You're using a serif and a sans serif. And then a couple weeks from now, somebody says, oh, you know, instead of Times, let's use Georgia. Well, if you've set your theme fonts, all you have to do is change one of those from, what did I say, from one
sans serif.
Yeah. Sans serif. Oh, you from there, if you've set all your text to be one of those theme fonts, if you change the theme font, it will ripple through the whole deck. So that can be the power of it, instead of having to do replace fonts or, you know, which.
Yeah, thanks for covering that off. I'm going to bring up Publisher. I know this is all about PowerPoint.
Microsoft Publisher?
Do you remember Publisher? For the longest time, I used that tool with a lot of my clients who had the Microsoft suite and needed to edit things. It was awesome. It did all the things that PowerPoint can't do. I don't know why some of that capability can't be carried from one Microsoft product to the next.
That would be the best use of Publisher, to take some of its text formatting and put it into...
Yes, exactly.
Or if we just get some of the Microsoft Word formatting into PowerPoint, it would be an improvement.
I like Publisher better than Word still to this day, but I don't use it anymore. I don't even know if it's distributed, is it?
I don't know. Mm-hmm.
Troy, what else can't you do?
Well, you mentioned the whole about soft returns and word wraps, you know, image wraps and just a lot of things that make putting text into a layout easy. PowerPoint doesn't have those automated features. And what is even more painful is Word has many of them. InDesign has, you know, quadruple what Word has, and just the scalability of it or flexibility of it is more. So soft returns are a big deal. I'm really big on audience perception and legibility of the message. So a lot of times a word hanging off, or you can actually change the whole message with the wrong hyphenation. You know, if something says non-destructive and you have non up high and you have destructive on the next line down, people read usually the left edge of the paragraph really quick. So they're going to read, this is destructive. You know, mm-hmm. they can get the whole wrong message. So soft returns, which you can accomplish in PowerPoint manually with a shift return, is good. But it would be, it's just a limitation. Mm-hmm. You can kind of replicate the effect, but you can't actually automate it. The other one that I think is a really cool tip to talk about is when not to use the wrap text in shape feature. So every time you insert a shape, and I'm going to use a circle or like a pyramid shape would probably be a really good one. So you're using triangles. The very tippy top of the pyramid, you want to put the word, you know, executive officer, because that's who's in charge of the whole whatever you're talking about. The problem is executive officer is not going to fit inside the triangle shape because it's such a small confined area. The first thing you could do is you could open up, you know, go into the text box for that, and you could expand the left and right margins to be zero so that there's no inset margins. Mm-hmm. So you can try and squeeze it in there. But those are a good example where you unclick the little checkbox in the text box, the format shape text box options. It says wrap text in shape, which is the thing that kind of creates multiple line structures. And a lot of times that's the only time I will say, go ahead and uncheck that. So you get the word executive, what did I just say? Executive director will now overlap the triangle. It'll not be constrained by the triangle. And that's a great feature because those are things you can do in InDesign almost automatically. It's really, really easy and intuitive to accomplish those in InDesign. In PowerPoint, you can do that. You just got to know where to go find the setting and be aware of it. Does that make sense?
Yep.
Yeah, totally.
Okay.
You know, another thing we didn't mention was columns. And that's an aspect of print design. Good print design is very often in columns. You can set any text box in PowerPoint to be column text, as many columns as you want, and you can set the gutter. It's there. It's right on your ribbon, but not too many people know about it. So if you are making a print only slide or presentation, you most likely want to make use of columns.
There are lots of gotchas with using columns, but they are there.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The gutters aren't very accurate.
And I don't know if it happens on the PC, but very often the columns kind of get messed up and you have to go up and select, like if you have three columns, you just have to select three again and it realigns everything.
Oh.
Maybe that's just the Mac.
So I know I mentioned shadows earlier. What do you two think of when we say shadows as an Adobe technique in PowerPoint? Because I'm not going to bias the whole conversation.
There used to be an add-in for creating soft shadows, which I used all the time. And that was back in the day when PowerPoint didn't allow for soft shadows. The only when you select hit shadow, it would give you this hard black edge to the shadow, which just looked beyond terrible.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep.
8-bit. Animate or 8-bit visuals right
and,
there.
And that's the kind of thing that I think initially gave PowerPoint a really bad name, because if you were creating graphics in PowerPoint and you wanted to add a shadow, it would look like, as you said, like this 8-bit video game. And I think a lot of people have never realized that it's gotten so much better since then.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sandy?
I think of soft shadows, which was the exact name of the tool that Nolan's referring to. We got that feathered shadow look now since 2007, I think, is when it was introduced.
Yeah. So it's the PPT Extreme add-in.
There you go.
Mm-hmm. Soft shadow was the name of the add-in. It was awesome because it was ridiculous. I would go out to Photoshop not only to create shadows for images and text, or not only for just images, I would actually do it for text. I had a whole collection of soft edge shadow pings because, you know, I could distort them. I had circles, I had squares, you still can't do a really good cast shadow in PowerPoint. So I still revert to some of those or some other PowerPoint techniques. But I had this whole collection of images that were just shadows that I created in Photoshop because you couldn't do any of them. As the kind of conclusion of that, I think that the soft shadow add-in is the only add-in from PPT Extreme that's no longer available, or it's probably still available as an old download, but it's no longer marketed because PowerPoint has completely replaced the need for an add-in to create soft shadows because the PowerPoint shadows are really good. I mean, you can do a lot of great design elements, especially when you get into the shadow settings, you start adjusting the blur and the opacity and the rotation and now if they could just get an angle onto the, a cast shadow type effect. So those original opaque hard edge shadows, they were just like an instant visual clue to anybody looking at a PowerPoint slide that it was PowerPoint and they hated them. So therefore they hated the program. You know, I had that whole library just to basically make things not look like PowerPoint. So the nice soft feathered edge shadow we have now as a standard feature, most people just assume it's the way it is. Huge, huge improvement.
And as you pointed out, occasionally you still may need to create your own shadows, but you can actually do a lot of that in PowerPoint. I have a tip at the end of the podcast today. I occasionally create my own shadows by using, let's say, a black square or circle, and then going into PowerPoint, glowing, not glowing the edges, soft edges. Mm-hmm. Is that what it's called?
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a, just like you can set the transparency, there's a slider for soft edges. So if you take a black circle, for example, make it, you know, 50% transparent and then do soft edges, it will be a shadow. And like, for example, if you want a globe like floating on a tabletop and you mm-hmm. want like a down shadow, you know, in the bottom, mm-hmm. yep. That's the way I would do that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, very cool. I generally do it with gradient fills and on a path as opposed to whatever the standard gradient fill. Now I got to look it up. Cool. Somebody come up with another topic while I look that up.
Well, speaking of gradient fills,
yeah,
gradient fills and lines is another I guess graphic design Adobe technique.
Oh yeah, because a lot of people may not remember, but PowerPoint didn't always have the ability to create gradients, and they also definitely did not have the ability to create a gradient with transparency. So suddenly you could create, and that's how I actually create my. If I'm going to create a shadow effect, I use a gradient to zero transparency, and it's literally under type. The standard is linear, which means it's going to go from one area to another. The one that's path changes it so it follows the shape itself. So you can create some really cool cast shadows that way. But, you know, this is like common shadows, soft shadows and transparency and gradient fills. They're common to Adobe, so much so that it's not even a thought. It's just what you can do. So adding that capability to PowerPoint was a huge Adobe technique that's just now a standard internal feature.
Yeah,
and the gradients can be really cool. You can do some great stuff.
You can, but remember, it wasn't an easy start. When they introduced this in 2007, it was a nightmare. You know,
horrendous.
Trying to set those gradients, the interface, the user interface was awful. It wasn't back compatible. If you happened to put text in a gradient box, which I didn't, you couldn't edit
the whole
it.
Ping.
Yeah, it was awful.
Yeah, it was horrible. Yeah, and I think the gradients are actually they're the same coding underlaying as what it was in 2007. They just gave us an actual interface that works.
Yep.
Yeah, if anybody wants to experience pain, just open up PowerPoint 2007 and try and make a circle with, you know, like a gradient from the center out. It was
painful. So back to, you know, Photoshop techniques, I use a gradient fill all the time over an image. So if you take a box and you set a gradient from black to, actually what you want to do is go, let's say, black to black, but then on one of those blacks, you make it 0% transparency. Mm-hmm. So you basically have black fading out to nothing. Now you can take that box and place it over an image, and assuming you have a black background in this case, that image will look like it just fades out on one side to nothing, which is a great way if you don't have an image that fills the page to create kind of an organic slide. And again, that's the kind of thing we might do in Photoshop with a layer mask, but you can do it right in PowerPoint.
Absolutely. No, that's like a totally amazing, I mean, again, things you could not do in previous, or if you don't know about them, you still can't do them. So just any of these techniques can make very highly visual designs pretty quick. I mean, mm-hmm. it's really, really quick, I would say.
So that's really a gradient mixed with a semi-transparent fill. But let's talk also about some of these other artistic effects that you can do just to images or shapes right in PowerPoint.
Well, name a few, Nolan.
You have a blur, which is a neat effect, and you have a whole slider on that. I actually did a presentation once where it was an award thing, and we were revealing like which ad campaign won the award. So the first slide put up the ad campaign, but we blurred it, so you couldn't quite make out what it was. And then we just did a transition to the next slide, which wasn't blurred. And then the photo, you know, with a slow fade, you know, magically came into focus.
Nice.
So, and again, all non-destructive, right in PowerPoint. So we just do that. I use blur a lot, actually. If you blur an image, you know, really the most you can, all the way to 100%, you can use it as an abstract background.
Mm-hmm.
You could take a photo of anything, pretty much, blur it, and you now have a cool, you know, gradient, you know, background that you might otherwise have to create in PowerPoint. Oh, I'm sorry, Photoshop.
So I have a pet peeve about blurs.
Yes.
And I've brought this up to the Microsoft dev team. It's not going to go anywhere. Is that when you blur something in Photoshop, you take your image and you'd have a canvas larger, so you have transparency. So you can blur it so that the blurring edge, you know, the edges get blurred as well. The one dilemma with PowerPoint's blur is that it's constrained to, you know, if you just have a JPEG in there and you're going to blur it, you're blurring a rectangle. There is no blurred edge. It's still a hard edge. Does that make sense? It just,
yeah.
It's one of those things that's like, hey, why can't you just, I thought I was smart. I, you know, went into the crop tool and I reduced the image size so that there was transparency around it. It's still locked to the actual image.
Have you tried adding a soft edge on top of a blur?
Yeah, but then it's, yes.
That, but then that's, it still doesn't quite work.
You can do, I actually do that, like a 7-point soft edge. But yeah, it's just kind of one of those limitations. Mm-hmm. And you also need to go into the format picture so you can play with all the effect, you know, the amount of transparency of the effect over top and the scaling or how much blur it applies. You don't have to go with the stock blur from the quick drop down.
Right.
A lot of really good flexibility.
When you apply those soft edges, for if you all of us, you know, let's say you have it applied at, I can't remember the numbers now, 10%, 15%, whatever it is, and you expand that image, all of a sudden you have to reset the blur because it isn't proportionate to the size of the image. You know what I mean? All of a sudden the blur will become a hard edge because it stays at 10%.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. There's no variability. There's what I'm looking for, Sandy. Thank you.
Variability.
If you do that, you don't get that kind of blurred, you know, rough randomness to it. It's very mathematical and linear.
Mm-hmm.
But it's
so, yeah, cool. So there are problems with that. There are also problems just with semi-transparency in general, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Oh.
It's a cool tool because, you know, think Instagram right now. We have blurred background. We've got the semi-transparent color over it, semi-transparent text over it. Very, very current. But my big problem is when I work with these large companies who, I guess, laser printers are what big companies use, those transparencies end up showing up as grids, a grid-like image in a print document.
That's a print driver issue, and it's a big deal because Microsoft doesn't hand off the same amount of print data as, mm-hmm. as I'll just say, an Adobe program. So speaking, like a semi-transparency, depending on how you go to PDF, it may not be transparent anymore, or it may show an outline over it, which is where a lot of the grid type little lines show up.
Mm-hmm.
Does anybody, when they're, because we're on semi-transparency, how do you create a PDF so it maintains the transparency? Or do you have issues when you create a PDF and you suddenly go, hey, that's not transparent anymore?
I've found recently that without doing anything, PDF is making things correctly. I found I used to have more of an issue with that, with transparency in the past. And what we're talking about is, if you, let's say you have an image and you want it to be darker, well, a great technique for that is to make a rectangle that completely fills it with black, and then you play with the transparency. So it kind of like ghosts back, and then you can put content over it. But as we've been talking about, the problem with doing that is some printer drivers and printers can't understand and interpret that, and it doesn't print the way you see it on the screen.
Exactly.
So, Troy, to your point, I basically don't do anything special when I'm making PDFs. If I'm concerned about that, or usually what happens is the client says, hey, Nolan, this isn't printing right. And I go, oh, right. Mm. usually what I'll do then is fix it in PowerPoint by selecting that transparency and the image, copying it, and pasting it within PowerPoint as an image.
Yep.
Okay. And by doing that, it re-rasterizes it and there's no more transparency anymore. That box is gone. That's, and you've created a new image.
Yeah. So I will say that, and see, you're on the Mac workflow, so you're using a different PDF engine, but Microsoft has added their own PDF. You can go file export or file print, and you can use a Microsoft PDF print engine as opposed to the Adobe print engine. And the Microsoft one is very optimized for bevels, gradients, and transparency. I still have problems with the PDF engine, print engine. So my general workflow is to use the Microsoft Create PDF, just because it doesn't have those effects. So that's where I was going with semi-transparencies and issues. A lot of times it's not the design, but the output of it. And Sandy, your thing about the grid lines, that's completely it. But if you created a PDF using the Microsoft export PDF, you wouldn't have any of those. And then they just print the PDF because there's no more transparency for that printer to interpret. They're just interpreting the PDF document.
Okay. Well, here's an example, though, of where that's so limiting. You know how when we use default table formatting?
Yes.
The shading will be a percent of whatever your theme colors are.
Unfortunately.
Yes. So that is a problem when you're you have default tables for a financial services company and they print everything. So you have to go in, you always have to have custom tables unless you have an add-in from one of our programmer MVPs.
That's pretty funny. I have a call later today with add-in developer and I should probably bring that up because it's all about tables and I haven't thought about that. Hey, thanks for the tip, Sandy. I'm going to bring that up. It's in my notes now.
Okay.
Let's go. Do you have something else, Nolan?
Sometimes it's easier, like if you just want a lighter shade of, let's say you have a white background, you just want a lighter shade of something, it's just so easy to move the transparency like of a shape. And that's cool, except when you run into this issue. So what I'll do a lot of times, I'll have to sample that. I'll change the transparency, then sample that color to create a new color, and then fill it 100%.
Yes. Oh, very good.
So you get around no transparencies.
Good suggestion.
Cool. Let's jump over to like kind of more animation-y things.
Okay. Well, you know, the biggest new thing in PowerPoint is the oncoming of Morph, which is so much easier and more dynamic than motion paths motion paths. That's exactly what it was called in PowerPoint up until now.
Motion paths is still our animation effect, but Morph does it does tweening. It's a flash thing.
Right.
But
we've had Morph for 3-4 months at this point, maybe a little longer. But this is the kind of thing that's been in Keynote for years, called Magic Move. Mm-hmm. And for years, it was the one big thing that people said, oh, Keynote's so much better because it has Magic Move.
Because it does this, and now we can do it in PowerPoint. You're right, though, just to distinguish, motion paths are an animation effect. Morph is the transition that I think makes that. We were using motion paths for years to try to create the same effect.
Oh, and moving elements, duping them across slides, you can create these visual, you know, seamless visual effects to the audience. But yeah, it's awesome.
Well, just an example, and I think I might have mentioned this in our last podcast, but was a customer moved from an old logo design to a new logo design, and they wanted to reveal it at a recent meeting. I was able to take the old logo shape, adjust it to rebuild. I mean, it was simple. It went from a flame to a triangle. So the resulting logo was very, very simple. But I was able to use Morph to literally have that flame, multicolored flame, morph into multicolored triangles, then morph into their single solid triangle. It was just awesome.
Cool.
So I'm doing one of my sessions at this year's presentation summit. I'm pretty excited about because we're using Morph a lot in a lot of design projects. And I'm just really excited because one of my sessions is using Morph, and my tagline for it when we were kind of developing the outline for it is Morph is the best animation that's not an animation because it's not in the animation pane. So that's really my whole thing is I'm just showing how to use Morph to create these. They're effects you cannot create using the animation pane, some of them, well, many of them. And it's so easy to use. It does have a couple of downsides. It creates more slides in general, and you just got your presenter past that mental standpoint. You know, with that kind of heavy flash design background that I came from, using motion paths was a natural step. I was like, yeah, we're going to do it. Mm-hmm. And a lot of After Effects type of visuals, you know, you can accomplish them directly in PowerPoint. But boy, when you combined, so I'm using not the Morph analogy, but if you combine motion paths and something like Shyam's motion path tool add-in, mm-hmm. where you can put an image, an element in the end position and dupe it to the next slide so you can continue on, you could completely avoid flash for lots and lots of visual animation. It's all kind of a moot point now because FLA and SWF files no longer work in PowerPoint. And that's good because now we can do these complex animations directly in PowerPoint, whether it be using motion paths on a lot of kind of visual tricks or combining them with the new Morph tool. It's, again, Adobe-like techniques that can completely be done directly in PowerPoint. And with Morph, you don't need a high degree of expertise. You just have to have vision of what to accomplish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you used to be able to import Flash into PowerPoint, and as powerful as that was, it was also unbelievably frustrating at times.
Oh yeah.
Oh, I loved it. That was my that was my endpoint to making things happen. So video editing as opposed to Flash design, because they kind of go hand in hand a lot. Adobe Premiere is now the dominant video editor. No comments as to whether that's a good or a bad thing. But so video editing is an Adobe technique. Are there, let's talk about video editing techniques, things that we do directly in PowerPoint now versus going out to a video editor.
You can do lower thirds. You can put content over video that you didn't used to be able to do, I think, until 2010. So for example, you're showing a video and you want to put what the industry calls a lower third, which is basically says who this person is, or it's like a caption. So you're playing a video of a person and you want to say, hey, this is John Smith from so-and-so company. You can do that. You just design a little text box that fades in over it and then fades out. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to go ask your video editor to insert, you know, what they call a lower third or a caption.
And you can combine that with transparency and gradients to make absolutely some cool visual effects.
Yeah. Very easy. So all this stuff that used to need a video professional to do, you can do right in PowerPoint.
You can, what is it called? It set a frame, you know, what is that? The opening frame rather than having a blank slide.
Like a title card or a.
Yeah, I get, that's not the PowerPoint term, but that's exactly what you can do that in PowerPoint. You can set any part of the video as your.
Oh, poster frame.
Thank
poster
you. Frame. Poster right. frame. Mm-hmm.
Right. So if it starts with a black screen and you know, you just want to use a frame from farther in, you can do that. Or you can just set any image. You can select an image to be a poster
yes.
frame.
Exactly.
You can also, hey, you can put in and out points. You can mm-hmm. basically.
Oh, yeah. The trim.
Yeah. You can trim mm-hmm. a video. So if you have a 1 minute video, you only want, you know, these 10 seconds of it. Again, you don't need a video editor. Just say, I want to start here and end here.
Now, that used to be problematic for backward compatibility. Is that still an issue?
Oh, did it?
Yeah.
Not as much.
Okay.
It's definitely a thing. I mean, I love video. I'm all about putting motion on the screens to accent the presenter, not distract. But things that would be big for me are cropping. Because anything you can do to a photo, you can do to a video. Mm-hmm. So if you can crop a photo, you can crop a video. And maybe it's like you got the news segment, but they have that lower third, or it's actually the smaller lower third, but they have that little news ticker along the bottom, but it's dated from last year. So one, it's distracting, and two, it's not needed. You got a couple of things you can do now. As Nolan said, you can actually put a box over top of it because we can put other content on top of a video. Video does not have to be the top of the Z order. But you can also just select the video and crop it. Huge, huge thing. I mean, I used to bring a video editing system with me to corporate events because videos took a lot longer to render. And that was a lot of what I was doing, is just cropping things out, resizing and stretching. You can actually, and we have a couple of blog posts about this, but the idea of just taking like an abstract video and stretching it so it's really long and thin, so it's completely distorted, but it's more of a visual effect. Mm-hmm. You can size a video to anything you want, and it can be distorted to anything you want. What else? Oh, you know, another really big one is transcoding. And a lot of people don't think about this, but say you have this nice legacy AVI that's like 900 megabytes, because AVIs are the biggest file format available for video. You can drop that into PowerPoint and then export that video. Well, you can then go into the, what do you call it? You go into the under file and the options. You can convert or transcode that video to your choice of an MP4 or a WMV. I'm actually not sure if WMV is on the Mac version, but you can actually change the format of that, and then you can export it out of the file and end up with a new video file format created all using PowerPoint, no video editor needed. What else can I think of? There's a lot of great things you can do with video. So, but yeah, the lower third and content over video is definitely there. The poster frame thing is huge because so many videos start with a black frame. So you put mm-hmm. it in there, you got this big black blob, and everybody's like, what's that? Mm-hmm. Well, you can just set the poster frame or trim it, either one, so you can mm-hmm. see that first few frames of content, and suddenly everybody goes, oh, I know what that is, you know, as opposed to a black frame.
Right.
Yeah, so there's a lot you could do. Okay, last topic. What can we do last?
PDF. Last sort of major Adobe program is Adobe Acrobat, and PDF output is huge. Adobe invented a PDF way back, and it's just a standard right now. So let's talk about what PowerPoint can do there.
Well, as you mentioned, PDF is the standard, but in 2007, PowerPoint 2007 is an optional download. You could install Microsoft's own internal PDF output engine, and it's now standard, I think, since PowerPoint 2010. It's an amazing tool.
Yeah, that's what we were talking about earlier. I personally endorse it over the using the Acrobat print engine. It's faster, and the results for visual it's great. It's a great, great addition.
There are a couple hitches here and there with PDFs. On the Mac, for example, when you output to a PDF, it does not retain hyperlinks, which is unbelievably frustrating. So anytime you need hyperlinks, you got to go to the PC. There's no real workaround on that. And there are also some issues with non-standard page sizes. Sometimes it's a little difficult to make a PDF out of them. I had a presentation that started with slide zero, which you occasionally want to do. So your first, it's a small option. Sometimes it's helpful. But in that case, at least on the Mac, I'm not sure about the PC, if you make a PDF with a presentation that starts at slide zero, it won't include slide zero.
Oh. I don't know why.
So it took me a while to figure that one out.
I have to tell you that the hyperlink thing is such a time saver. I recently did a huge PowerPoint user guide for a client, and they wanted it built in PowerPoint for some reason, but they wanted it then exported to PDF, and I didn't have to do a thing. It was an interactive guide, so we have an agenda, a table of contents. We could hyperlink to any section of the user guide, and all of that hyperlink activity, interactivity was maintained in the transition from the PowerPoint to PDF.
It's a non-linear document, so you can go into any order you want.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So for your links, this is more of a curiosity question. For your links, were they text-based links or object shape-based links?
Ah, good question. I put 99% shapes over them so that my text didn't change.
Okay. That was going to be one of my questions. Mm-hmm. I'll put a small plug in if anybody has an issue with, because the newest version does link so much better. PP Tools has an add-in called Prep for PDF. It was all about, I mean, the only reason I used it personally, I know I did a whole lot more, was for maintaining links. And it did a lot of really cool things. Like text links would actually stay as text links, and they worked, and you could reorder things and they'd work. So it's a small little plug, but so much more of that can now be done. PowerPoint has basically figured it out. This is Troy from TLC Creative Services, a design studio team focused on presentation design. If you're looking for presentation messaging and design, or show site graphics ops that are real presentation designers, take a look at tlccreative.com and the blog, which is now in its eighth year, thepowerpointblog.com, for lots of tips, tricks, and info.
This is Nolan Hames from Nolan Hames Creative. Check out my blog, presentyourstory.com. You can subscribe for lots of free downloads and goodies. And if you're looking for on-site presentation or data viz training, you can contact me at nolanhamescreative.com.
And this is Sandy Johnson with Presentation Wiz. Visit my website at presentationwiz.biz or my blog at pptwizblog, or just search for Sandra Johnson PowerPoint in your web browser and you'll learn all kinds of things about me.
For episode show notes, links, and more from this episode, visit us at our website, www.thepresentationpodcast.com. The Presentation Podcast is produced by TLC Creative Services, Inc. You can contact us with episode suggestions, questions for our hosts, or comments through our website. Subscribe at the iTunes Store or at our website for additional options. If you like the podcast, rate us on iTunes. Stars and reviews are greatly appreciated. Look for new episodes the first and third Tuesday of each month.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. We'll talk again soon.